It's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to Noon Show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. You're very welcome along to another edition of the 9 to Noon Show on this Tuesday, the 11th of November 2025. I do hope you're all very well. And it's great to have you on board for another show. And we've got the usual brilliant mix for you, I hope you agree, of news, the analysis, the stories behind the news. We've got great conversation as well, too, with people from across the Northwest and beyond, and your calls and comments. And coming up after 10, Community Garda information. So it's a packed 3 hours. It'll fly. Don't forget, you don't just have to listen. You can watch the show as well, if that suits you in your life. Maybe you're at home working from home. Maybe you're in a... I don't know, wherever you might be, that has a large TV, that's a smart TV, or has a Fire Stick or a Google device, you can open up the YouTube app and watch the show every single day. And the majority of our guests as well, Highland Radio Ireland. We're across the mobile devices on that platform, and we're on Facebook and X as well. And also, too, it's not just about watching live. You can podcast this show every single day. The podcast is live on our website from 11:30. And for an example, maybe you missed our interview yesterday with Irish champion jockey Dylan Brown McMonagall, a lovely young lad who is incredibly successful already and is certainly going to, I think, you know, leave his name in the annals of flat riding history, no doubt about it. He's so driven. We had a great chat with him yesterday. You can listen back to that in the podcast. In fact, you can watch it on my social media as well if you want. If you missed that, as I say, that comes up, well, that was up yesterday just after 11. Right, let's have a look at some of the newspapers this morning. An interesting US President Donald Trump, he's threatened legal action against the BBC over the way a speech he made was edited in a documentary aired by the British National Broadcaster. And I'll tell you why I'm mentioning this story in particular in a moment. But we played the clips out for you yesterday, and you could see his words were fashioned to say something that he didn't intend to say in the way he was portrayed as saying it. BBC chairman Sammy Sa yesterday apologised for the error of judgment that triggered the resignation of BBC's top executive and the head of news. Director General Tim Davey and News Chief Deborah Turnus quit on Sunday over accusations of bias and misleading editing of a speech Mr. Trump's delivered on January 6, 2021, before a crowd of his supporters stormed the Capitol in Washington. Now, you would say this doesn't go on. Does this go on often? Does it happen here? Well, I was listening to RTE this morning, briefly, while I was stuck in traffic down there, and a quote was attributed to President-elect Catherine Connolly, and the quote was that she said... Hamas was the fabric of the Palestinian people, something along those lines. The second part's less important than the first part, right? Which means that that Hamas is integral and is the only real thing there is about the Palestinian people. But of course, she didn't say that. What she actually said was that in the context of building a future for Palestine or Gaza, she said that Hamas was part of the fabric and therefore should be part of the conversation. But and there's a huge difference in saying someone is part, something is part of the fabric of something, and something is the fabric of something. So, you know, you have to be really careful when you're quoting people, be it playing out edited audio clips or verbally quoting them. As I say, that especially on her very important day where she becomes the 10th president of the country. Wish her all the best in that role. I'm confident she'll do really, really well. You know, but she was completely misquoted, and it's really quite a serious misquoting, I believe. But anyway, the Irish Times tells us that, and I've bitten the bullet, by the way, I ordered my glasses yesterday because I can read the papers in the morning, but I'm sort of... It's harder than it needs to be, so I'm just going to get glasses for it. Whether I wear them or not, we'll see. But anyway, some district courts continue to allow motorists to avoid convictions for penalty point offences by making charitable donations, despite a 2004 High Court ruling holding that such an approach is inappropriate. New court service figures show 480 penalty point road traffic offences were struck out between January 2022 and September 2025, with 459 motorists benefiting. 11 years ago, So it was 2014, I beg your pardon. The High Court ruled that a statutory provision making penalty points mandatory superseded the District Court common law jurisdiction to allow per box donations in lieu of convictions. Okay, so we'll have a dig through, see if there's any local figures in relation to that. You know, our country's never been as wealthy, or our wealth of this country is growing all the time, but the gap between those that have money and those that don't have money is widening all of the while as well too, which is sad, isn't it, that we have a country that's prospering, but it's not prospering for everybody, which is really quite unfortunate, which means that rising living costs are driving more households into debt and delayed debt to fund Christmas this year, with financial experts urging people to budget and borrow wisely if needed. This is the Irish Daily Mail, by the way. Last year, one in five consumers borrowed money to cover festive costs, according to the Competition and Consumer Protection Commission. The average amount borrowed by a Christmas spender was €631. Now, there are those as well, too, that probably do this not necessarily because they genuinely have to, but it's part of it, right? So you get a loan and you pay it off over the course of the year. It'd be relatively low repayments, and then do it again next year. So I would say there are those that do this because it suits them, but there are those then that borrow because they simply don't have the money. This equated, by the way, the €631 borrowing, the average, this equated to the average household in Ireland spending around €1,200 on gifts, food and socialising. Price comparison website bonkers.ie reported. The continued rise in food and energy costs, along with the removal of cost of living support measures in the recent budget, is predicted to boost borrowing numbers this year. Dara Cassidy from bonkers.ie said each year around 20 to 25% of people end up getting into debt to help pay for all the festivities. Now, I know this is private and personal to you, but is it something that you wish to share? Maybe you feel that you have no choice but to borrow to meet the needs of Christmas, or maybe it is like your own little personal financial Christmas club and you're comfortable in doing so. Let us know. 086 60 25000, that's the WhatsApp and the text number. Back to the presidency, and it is Michael D. Higgins, or yesterday was his last day. Michael D. Higgins quit Áras an Uachtaráin for the final time last night as the nation prepares to see Catherine Connolly sworn in as the 10th head of state. The 84-year-old and his wife Sabina took their famous dogs and left the Phoenix Park shortly before midnight. At the strike of 12, he ceased to be Ireland's first citizen after a rollercoaster 14 years in the post. In a statement, President Higgins said, "Serving as President of Ireland was a great privilege, and I would like to thank the people of Ireland for the warmth and the warmth of reception which they gave to both Sabina and myself over the past 14 years." And maybe you've got a memory of an engagement or an interaction or a conversation with Michael D. Higgins. You know, over the course of 14 years, many of you out there have encountered him in one situation or another. So maybe you've got a nice memory you wish to send it into us, send it into us to 086 60 25000, 086 60 25000, or call us on 0749125000. Do you have a nice memory to share of an engagement or encounter with former President Michael D. Higgins? There was a time where there was stuff happened that you never saw, you know, because it wasn't appropriate to share it, or it would be banned from social media or whatever it might be. But there was and it kind of reminded me of school days. Not that I was ever subjected to anything like this, but it kind of felt a little bit in that space. And this was a young lad who was cornered down in Galway, and there's two other lads, I suppose you could call them, and it's just out and out bullying and assault. And as I say, it was very, very unpleasant to watch. I thought, though, maybe I do need to watch it just in case anyone comments on it. But anyway, Gardaí are now probing an alleged racial assault on a teen lad in County Galway. It comes after a video of the violent incident went viral in recent days. The horrifying clip, which shows the young 14-year-old, Bangladeshi teenager with a school bag on his back being slapped and punched by two male teens. It's caused outrage nationally. And there was another violent incident, I believe it was in Dublin, Khloe Kardashian, who you may know, is a controversial character because of their crime and their imprisonment. And someone videoed that person just being punched straight in the face as well. And it was posted on social media. Just when did we get to sort of that type of a situation whereby people not only would do this to other human beings, whether you agree with them or not, and in the case of a teenager, there's never any excuse, and there's no excuse to assault anyone for that matter. But where did we get to a point whereby people would go up, you know, just standing in front of the person, like you wouldn't do this to a dog. If I'll tell you, see that young lad down in Galway, or even that that Kardashian person down in Dublin, if that was a dog, there would be absolute and utter outrage around the country and are on social media. It'd be shared everywhere and the disgust would be something else, right? And rightly so. But have we become immune to humans doing this to other humans, videoing it and posting it on social media where it's ratioed? Like, a lot of people are disgusted by it, but a lot of people cheer it on and try and justify it. And these things get hundreds of thousands and millions of views. And as I say, a lot of people going, well, shouldn't be here, or well, such and such happened, and all that kind of stuff. And as I say, if it was an animal, if these victims of assault were animals, there would be absolute national outrage. But people just stand back, and not a lot of people say something, which I really feel quite sad about. The Irish Daily Mirror: there have been calls for e-scooters to be registered and insured after a number of damning reports. This isn't going to happen. But anyway, Fianna Fáil backbencher and transport spokesperson Shane Moynihan has called for a raft of new measures following alarming reports of accident and injury levels and a rising number of seizures by Gardaí. Well, it's not a bit wonder they're being seized by Gardaí, because you can still go into a shop and buy one of these scooters that exceeds the allowed speed limit. I mean, how is that allowed? But anyway, a recent RSA survey found nearly one in four, 24%, regular e-scooter users had been involved in a collision, while one in three, 32%, have experienced a near miss. So, yeah, I don't think they're ever going to be... asking for them to be licensed and insured is akin to asking for bikes. They're being treated as bikes. So I don't think that's ever going to happen. But anyway, maybe you have a view on that. Maybe you believe they should be licensed and insured. And maybe you believe push bikes should be as well. Any views on any of that? It's a quiet enough day in the paper. I'll hold my hands up. In the papers, I'll hold my hands up and admit to that. But if you have anything to say in relation to anything you've heard, or if there's some information you wish to pass on to us, maybe it's an issue of concern, maybe it's some good news, let us know. 086 60 25000. That's the WhatsApp and text number. Or give us a call on 07491 25000. And also, we tend to group our requests and dedications to a slot just after 10 o'clock. So if there's anyone in your life that you wish to say hello to or send on good wishes to, feel free to use those numbers, and we'll be more than happy to do that for you as well. We're joined on the programme now by Sinn Féin Deputy Padraig McLaughlin. Thank you so much for your time. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg.
Right. Now, obviously, people are aware of the devastating extent of defective concrete blocks, in private homes, in council-owned homes, farm buildings, community centres. We haven't talked as much on this programme about the next area that's impacted, and that's Donegal schools. And I think people might be surprised to learn the actual figure, if they didn't know it already, of schools impacted by defective blocks.
Yeah, Greg, there's 16 schools that we know of. That's according to the Department of Education. And in a parliamentary question response that myself and Deputy Pierce Doherty received in recent days, they talk about this being a new issue and then say that they learned about it in 2021. So 4 years isn't new. And there's been a number of schools that I am aware of, but I never knew the total until this was confirmed by the department. And there's been a sort of an indifference to it. But what's emerged in recent times is they're now going to do a comprehensive study, the Department of Education, of all of the schools, and they need to come up with a plan as to how they address this. I mean, obviously, you can't leave it that buildings are unsafe. For example, myself and Deputy Doherty visited Drumfads National School in the Fannin Peninsula there last week, and you know that school is partially boarded off. It's a small rural school. They cannot have that. It's not sustainable for any length of time. Small school, half of it boarded off, with no clear pathway to having a resolution. So, yeah, this is another challenge in this whole arena, and the government need to grapple with it.
Does it need to be explored in terms of, you know, the legality of having children in a building that might be defective, in terms of, I suppose, liability, public liability insurance, or anything like that? God forbid anything actually might happen. This is different to a private home.
It is, but, you know, obviously you have children and teachers and staff spending substantial periods every day at the school. And if you take Drumfads, they have wooden boarding around about half of the outside of it. And that's because you have lumps of plaster. You can see very clearly that could fall down and land on a child. And there are other schools, particularly what you see as extensions that were built onto existing schools, that now, you know, are going to need to be taken down, frankly. So, you know, my frustration is that, you know, school, no, in the normal run of things, you have maintenance issues with schools. They put in for summer work schemes, emergency schemes. But this is very different. This is where, you know, it's obviously unprecedented in the history of the state, where you're going to have to probably demolish part, if not all, of 16 schools across the, and that's what we're aware of. I would imagine more schools are affected, Greg, and just the level of damage just hasn't manifested, but it's going to get worse and worse, as we know from the experience in Holmes.
I presume you're welcoming the fact that the government has committed to developing a strategy in this area, but do we know what that might look like and what the time frame is? Was any detail given to you in that regard?
No, and you know, what I found, and I said at the outset, you know, they refer to, and this would have been senior department officials that wrote this response for the minister, they refer to this being a new issue, but then they say 2021, like 4 years is not new. And it's only now, after 4 years, that they are committing to doing a full examination of all the schools and coming up with a plan. So I don't get a sense, I mean, from anything I look at with this government, there's any urgency. For example, Greg, you know, it's now a year since the government announced that they were going to increase the cap for the homeowners, the defective block, and that was in response to increasing prices that were out there. And it's taken them a whole year to ensure that cap applies to people who are already going through the scheme prior to October of last year. Mm. You know, a whole year. I mean, I'm not an expert legislator. I could have drafted this in a couple of hours.
Did I not read correctly that the building costs in Donegal have increased another 9% in the last year? So the delay in introducing... go ahead, yeah.
Yeah, no, Greg, you're absolutely right. They have increased. And what I'm hearing from homeowners all the time is that the gap between the amount of money available to them in the scheme and what they're being asked to pay by builders is just growing all the time. I mean, I have in the Dáil told a story of a homeowner I met on their site here. And this homeowner had a mortgage left of 6 years, and they would have been paying €900 a month. So 6 years, €900 a month. The gap leaves them about €200,000 short. They now will be left with a 21-year mortgage at €1,800 a month. Like, that's just devastating. And of course, they'll be in their 70s by the time they're out of this. So that's what the government call 100% redress. The gap is growing. And as you say, it's growing all the time. And it's 9% in the last year. Do you know, Greg, that it's a year and a half now since the SCSI, Society of Chartered Surveyors Ireland, carried out that most recent report for government on defective blocks and what it costs to rebuild houses, a year and a half, and the government are refusing to do another one because they
should
know what's going to happen.
Should that not be a rolling review? In other words, the SCSI are commissioned to deliver that information you know, timingly, because there will come a point actually when the costs might start retracting. You know, we're probably all of a sudden we'll see this happening every 6 weeks. But I'm being facetious there. But would it not be better to have a system in place where the SCSIR to deliver that information on the 5th of January every year, for an example? That would be the logical thing to do, I'd have thought.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. That should be the case. And the SCSI, you know, want to assist with this. They're the experts all across the state in terms of obviously what it costs in terms of labour and materials to build homes. But it's now a year and a half, and I put a parliamentary question in recently, and what happened was the government didn't answer the question. I then went to the Cairn Coroner and said, my question hasn't been answered. I know they did a report a year and a half ago. I'm asking, will they do one now in 2025? And eventually they very reluctantly answered it and said no. They have no plans to ask for an updated report. So they're allowing families to be more and more in debt, more and more of a gap. Now, Greg, there are a small number of families that this scheme works for, right? But that is a minority. The majority of homeowners are either going to be left with a huge gap or just can't
engage. Yeah, but there's also a lot of homeowners that are being forced to rebuild a house to a size that they don't want to build it to as well.
That's
right. I mean, that family you talked of with a 200,000 gap, maybe if they're of that age, their kids are 23 and 22, and maybe they could have, you know, cut a room or two off, or maybe they could have built a smaller house, the house of their dreams, so that heading into retirement it would be easier to heat or what have you. You know, to get on this scheme, if I'm correct, unless something changed, they're forced to build the same house again.
And would you believe, see that family I'm talking about, they actually built a smaller house.
Okay.
So that was the gap, building a smaller house. And you see, the prices are crazy. I mean, you know, we are getting prices for block work and plastering now that are higher than you would have down the country. And builders can name their price. That's the problem with the scheme. And like, my deep frustration is the pyrite remediation scheme, which almost 3,000 homeowners and families in Dublin and North Leinster avail of, almost 3,000. They got 100% redress. The scheme was administered by the housing agency. They didn't have to go out to contractors. Mm. They weren't left at the mercy of the markets. That's what was available for people on the East Coast. Yeah. What we have in the West Coast is they call it 100% redress, but it isn't, and you're left at the mercy of the market, and the market is now going through the roof.
A caller's reiterated the question, how do these schools have adequate insurance for the building, but also for the children and staff within these schools? You know, I presume if you were going to board up or restrict access to certain parts of the schools, it would require a site visit by your insurer or something along those lines. So a listener having the same sort of question I put to you a little earlier on.
Yeah, I mean, it is a real challenge, you know, and I would say that it's going to get worse, as you know, with defective blocks. As time moves on, it gets worse and worse. And, you know, that's why I say 16 is the current number of schools. I would be very, very confident that that number will just grow. Mm. People right now might be saying, you know, sort of, it's remarkable how small cracks within a couple of years can become something where plaster could fall off and cause difficulties. Okay. So that's the challenge that's there. You know?
Finally, Donegal, from my understanding, is going to be very well represented at the inauguration of the 10th President of Ireland, Catherine Connolly. You'll be attending, of course, and others from the county and across the country. You know, frame the significance of this day for me in your view.
Well, you know, obviously it's always a big moment when you have a new president inaugurated. I think Michael D. Higgins did a tremendous job for the last 14 years. And I do believe Catherine Connolly is going to continue in that light. And obviously in Donegal, listen, we were delighted, along with Independence and 100% Redress Party, to go out and campaign for her, to canvass for her. And she got a fantastic endorsement in Donegal. I don't think she's going to let us down.
Okay, safe onward journey. Now, there is another event taking place the 25th of November at 12:30 p.m. That's 12:30 in the afternoon, of course. A defective concrete product homeowners, they're demanding 100% redress. This is coming from a Mayo group, by the way. And they say, we are families living in crumbling, defective concrete homes. We face homelessness, financial ruin, and live with psychological torture daily. Lunacy such as this, holes in homes, means infestations by rodents entering through crumbling walls. The holes cannot be patched up because entry to the DCB scheme depends on a nonsensical damage threshold that can take years to be met. Our lives are in crisis, and they say, and yet the government continues to fail us and gives us defective schemes. Pyrite blocks have led to people ending their lives. So there is a protest outside the door, and it is on, and the statement goes on, it is on the 25th of November at 12:30 p.m. Now, before we take a break, by the way, we carried a comment by a listener who discovered an app on their husband's phone, for an example, and it gave rise to suspicion and what have you. Now, I don't know exactly how that panned out, but they did contact us, recontact us to thank you for all of the advice that was given on air and on social medias, and they were able to actually... they were able actually to sort of move forward. How they did, I'm not quite sure. But it triggered another couple of comments that we had in. I'll get to that in a moment, actually. I just want to have a quick read of that before I do read it out. So I'll get to that in a little while before 10. But let's take a quick break now. Welcome back. I referenced a little earlier on in the show Garda investigating a horrible assault down in County Galway. A young foreign lad could have been born here, could have moved here. I'm not really quite sure, but from a different background, cornered and assaulted by two bigger teenagers, by the looks of things. Jimmy, your comments in relation to this. Good morning to you. Thanks for taking the time to chat to me. Are you there, Jimmy? No, I've lost you, Jimmy. I'll come back to you. We might reconnect there. More in relation to that, a caller says, good morning, Greg. Imagine if you had the same outrage and talked with the same passion when the 10-year-old Irish girl was raped. You're like Holly Kearns. It's a matter of fact. Irish people do more crime. Where did she get those facts? Greg, the guards don't give out that data and information. Firstly, we discussed that extensively. There was the same level of outrage. There's this presumed thing whereby... someone believes that you have a view, and then they'll actually attribute something to you that's completely completely untrue. We talked about that extensively on the show, and everybody was outraged by it. It's absolutely horrendous. And I even referenced it there a couple of days ago, to the point whereby the girl was so traumatised by her experience that she hasn't been able to be interviewed by Gardaí yet. What we couldn't talk about at that point was the person who was charged, because I certainly wouldn't want to ever do anything that would stop that young girl getting justice. So your comment, whilst I understand it, has just been attributed to me, even though it's completely and utterly untrue. But I suppose it, in some way, is it that you're deflecting and justifying the fact that, you know, you didn't reference or condemn that attack in Galway at all. So I'm presuming maybe you think it was kind of okay. To me, it wasn't. Jimmy, sorry, I have you back again. Good morning.
Hi, Sean. Greg, sorry. Good morning.
That's all right, Jimmy. Did you call me son? I like that. It's okay. It's a term of endearment. Listen, Jimmy, great to chat to you. You when you saw that story or heard that story, reflecting on your time growing up in Belfast, what's your view on all of it, Jimmy?
Well, I was listening to you talking about it this morning, and I realised, you know, that this thing is quite common, and it has happened long before our recent times. And having grown up in Belfast then, it obviously had impacted me at one stage when I was beaten up like that because I was a Catholic. And in further education then, I went in to understand the feelings of people and why these things happened.
Mm.
And my own interpretation was of it then, after that. I mean, I was angry at the time, and I was very embarrassed by it as well, the fact that I had been kicked like that, and was left lying on the ground with nobody to help me. And it was quite traumatic, I suppose, at that age when I was about 15 or 16. But nowadays, when I look back on it, I realise those guys that did that probably didn't realise what they were doing or why they were doing it.
Mm.
And they didn't see me as a person, I suppose, at that stage. They saw me as a whatever they thought was be a Catholic who needed to be given a good hiding type of thing, you know.
So you were completely, in their eyes, they dehumanised you, really?
Yes, yeah. So it's important, I felt then, I feel now that it's important that we teach people to, as you say, humanise others in school at a very early age, starting off in primary school. And that is based upon the, I suppose, the education in emotional intelligence.
So what
and
is emotional?
What
is
it?
What, how would you define emotional intelligence, Jimmy?
Well, I used to teach and I used to lecture in it as well, which has helped me to understand myself better, but also to understand other people. And it's to do, there are sort of four pillars to it. The first one being self-awareness, which is about your own self and your own feelings and why you have those feelings. The second one would be in managing those feelings, which is called self-management. And then the social awareness is to do with the having empathy for other people and trying to understand their feelings and the reasons why they feel things like that. And then there's relationship management. So those are the four pillars of emotional intelligence. And if we had a better knowledge of those things taught from a very early age in primary school, then that would help things much better in this country in terms of the, I suppose, the racial aspects of the problems we have now.
In a way, not to in any way give anyone a pass, Jimmy, but are people responsible for this type of action in some way victims of a broader social problem in that what kind of guidance have they been given? What kind of understanding of self or respect or tolerance or understanding? You know, what kind of lives are they going to lead if that's the crack they're at now?
Well, people are always responsible for their own feelings and their own actions. The thing is to train them out of that immediate response and to get them to take time to think about what they do before they do it. And they, I mean, from an anger perspective, if you think about it, you always used to hear your mother saying, you know, count to 10 before you say anything.
Yeah. I should have listened, Jimmy. Sometimes I'm guilty of not, but yeah.
Yeah, but the reason for that is that there's an organization called 6 Seconds in the United States, and that organization promotes the time frame, which is counting to 10, which takes about 6 seconds. And that's to readjust the chemical imbalance that happens in your brain with your amygdala.
Mm. So there's
science
to it.
And that's why the 6 seconds, that counting to 10 is so important.
All right, Jimmy, listen.
From an anger perspective.
Just one final question. This incident, this horrible incident that you endured when you were 16, how lasting were the physical impacts of it, but the emotional impacts of it, how lasting was that, you know, through your teens, maybe even into your adulthood?
I think the situation was difficult because Belfast was a very bad place to live as the trouble started then. After that would have been the trouble started. And you sort of grow into the fact that you're living in a society which has got major problems in it. And you tend to put all of these things underneath the counter. You forget about them. You try to forget about them and they stay there. But they only come back later on in life when you're thinking about them, when you have time. And so it's not something which you deal with at the time, and it doesn't last long at that particular time, but it's always there at the back of your head.
All right.
Somewhere along the way, it'll come back to you, to haunt you, maybe later on in life.
Yeah, and I asked that question suspecting that was the answer because, you know, it's really important that people understand that something that they can be responsible for can have far reaching impacts. Jimmy, thank you so much for your insight and your understanding there. Greg, read the young lad who was assaulted in Galway. This is the manifestation of far-right rhetoric. Public figures and politicians who spout this nonsense to the masses emboldened thugs like this to carry out crimes in the name of protecting our community. These are the exact same people who start every post online with, "I'm not racist, but..." You've a responsibility as a major broadcaster not to platform the ringleaders. We all know exactly who they are, who encourage this sort of behaviour. That's Gar in Remelton, who... sent that in. Okay, back with more after the break. Lots of you messaging in relation to traffic and observations of traffic difficulties with ambulances getting through roadworks and stuff like that. I'm not ignoring them. I will get to them. And I believe we're going to have some commentary from Letterkenny Chamber later on in the programme in relation to, well, they represent businesses, many of them in Letterkenny, don't they, to get their views on the active travel works, which are ongoing in parts of the town and due to get underway in others. We're joined on the programme now by MEP Cynthia Nimirohu. Good morning to you, Cynthia. Thank you for joining us again. It's very good to have you on the programme. Now, you've been accessing some figures from the Irish Prison Service, which I would say for listeners, they might be surprised. Maybe they won't be surprised because we do know how overcrowded the prisons are and those numbers have to be managed. So what is the situation that you've uncovered here?
Yes, Greg, you're right. I applied for a Freedom of Information request in relation to the temporary release of criminals, but in particular, violent criminals. So what I did was I got a snapshot for various categories. And the most recent snapshot I was able to get for about 10 categories was the 23rd of June this year, 2025. And at the top of the most serious offences were attempted murder, threatened murder, assaults, harassment and other offences. And what I found out was that on that particular date in June, there were 45 people on temporary release on that given day, 9 female and 36 male. Now, I won't go through the other categories, the other 9 categories or 8 categories, but I can tell you that the total amount on temporary release, Greg, for that day of females was 132, of males was 426, and in total then, 558. Now, I hasten to add the figure fluctuates around that. I've got the total figure for more recent dates, and it's in excess of the 550 on any given date that are on temporary release. But what concerns me, Greg, is the temporary release for violent criminals, emphasis on violent. And also, I'm questioning the prison authorities about their, what seems to be their custom and practice or their routine affording of temporary release for violent criminals. I think they need to reassess their practice and procedure. And I think they need to decide in this pinch point of limited places, limited prison places, that they've got to apply different criteria, because I'm unashamedly on the side of the victims. And to be quite honest with you, Greg, if I would prefer to see a prisoner having to stay in, I'm going to say safe, but uncomfortable circumstances for a limited period, if it actually saved a victim out there from a re-offence when they're on temporary release.
Yeah, of course, but how much of these releases are whether people like it or not, you know, you pay your debt to society and hopefully there's rehabilitation in there. You know, how do we, or how do you know that this isn't part of that that serving of the sentence that's regularly normal?
Because temporary release is different. I specifically asked for these figures, Greg. No, you're quite right. I didn't want to get it fuzzy. I didn't want my argument to be fuzzy or confusing or anything like this. No, of course, if you do the crime and you do your time and you might get some time off, which you usually do, about 25% is normally knocked off the sentence imposed by the judge. And once you engage in your rehabilitation and all that, of course, a prisoner is entitled to be released. But I'm talking about temporary release in circumstances where we do have an issue, as you well know, because you've covered it on the problem with overcrowding. And of course, overcrowding can lead to other problems. And it's those problems that I think are being overemphasized by the prison authorities and not enough due diligence being paid to the particular prisoners that are being afforded temporary release. I think they need to relook at their adjudication process very carefully, because we do know from the stats and the previous studies that those out on bail, separate issue, Greg, but it's somewhat similar. But those on bail do commit crimes, can commit crimes. Not everybody on bail commits crimes, but it's similar for temporary release. Reoffending.
Yeah, and it also feeds into this sense that there's a revolving door, repeat offenders back before the courts over and over again, often on the taxpayers' dollar, so to speak. Yes. You know, a lot of the names and faces become incredibly familiar. Would greater capacity automatically, in your opinion, see less temporary releases? Like, in other words, is it about capacity? Is that why we're seeing these temporary releases? And if we get more capacity, particularly with women, actually, the women's prison is completely full of women's prisons. Yep. Do you believe that we would see less temporary releases with more prison spaces?
Yes, we would. And obviously, from a prisoner point of view, they would have more comfortable conditions, more safe conditions and so forth. But also, they would be given an opportunity, Greg, for rehabilitation, because that's a really important piece of our criminal justice system and one that I firmly believe in. Yeah, the prison numbers, Greg, continue to grow. We've had increased court sittings. So that has led to more convictions. We've had population growth. We've more people committing crimes. And we have increased level of detection by An Garda Síochána. So, but the government is doing something about this pinch point. I mean, there is a dual approach now by Minister Jim O'Callaghan. And you know I am a fan of his. Mm. And I follow his brief assiduously, having been a barrister. And he basically got his feet under the desk there in the Department of Justice. And he decided to address this particular component of his department in a two-pronged approach. One is capacity by increasing prison capacity, and the other is by pursuing further measures to support and promote non-custodial sentences. So let's keep them out of jail if we can, but at the same time we have to have some regime of punishment. Okay. Now, he can't wave a magic wand, Greg, and he can't build Thornton the Thornton Hall prison in a flash, but at the same time he has secured a record capital investment for that in the budget just gone by, and to my knowledge it was 67.9 million, and it's part of a total investment of 527 million for over a 4-year period for the prison service. That's 2026 to 2030. Okay. And 495 million of that is going to be invested in building projects to deliver on a plan to build, the target is, over 1500 prison spaces up to 2031.
Cynthia, thank you for your time. Have a good day. Look after yourself. Bye-bye, Slam. Cynthia, MEP Cynthia Nimorhu there. 086 60 25,000 is the WhatsApp and text number. A caller says, ambulance yesterday evening trying to get into Letterkenny University Hospital, sitting there with the blue lights on, it couldn't go anywhere. Motorists panicking, going up on the footpath, and all they were doing were blocking him. That's a horrible situation for the ambulance service staff, but also whomever is in the back of that ambulance, but also it's a lesser inconvenience, but it's very stressful. If you're that motorist trying to get out of the way, it can be very, very stressful. There's just no doubt about that. Morning, guys. Just to let everyone know, traffic backed up almost to McDade's garage, top of Lurgy Brack. That was a little earlier on today. I'm not sure if that's eased. It was also back down, well down towards Illustrin as well. Good morning, Greg. There appears to be an incident on the Ballyrain Road at the back of the ATU, which has left the Ashlawn area totally blocked. Does anyone know what's going on? Again, that was a little earlier. Hi, Greg. It's unbelievable that millions spent on cycle lanes used by the few and in wintertime used by no one. Get them to pay road tax, insurance and a test like an NCT to make sure brakes and lighting is working correctly. Also make it compulsory they wear luminous jackets, or a fine of €50 will be applicable. That comes in from Joe, thanks for that. Joe, one of your contributors yesterday was on about park and ride for people coming into the town. At the moment, they can't even provide a proper bus shelter at Mr. Chippy. People standing out in the rain. Another morning, Greg. What planet is Councillor Jay McMonagle living on if he thinks I'll be walking or cycling into Letterkenny? It is crazy, but the argument being it could be the new generation or the next generation, or maybe people might be inclined to do so. But that's his view. My guess is that most people who are voting for that councillor who's in favour of the traffic case in Letterkenny don't have a job to go to. Well, listen, I probably shouldn't have read that, right? I don't want to be screening messages, but that's just hurtful. People vote for many different reasons. Another, we learn as we go along, shocking stuff. We are paying taxes for this. It is funny. Not funny, ha-ha, but funny, strange. But yeah. Councillor Jane McMonagall is delusional. Great idea. I'll cycle to work when the weather is nice, but at 5:30 p.m. it's pouring the rain. He was disrespectful to you as well, Greg. No, he wasn't. He was fine. Don't worry about that. These councillors say they're working in the council for 20 and 25 years. The result of this work is a shocking indictment as to how little they have achieved. And I think that there does come a point whereby you as a person might think you're seeing a bigger picture here and where things might be going and how we need to get there. And maybe the cart is ahead of the horse, but at least there's a cart there and all that kind of stuff. But there comes a point whereby you have to listen to the business community and you have to listen to residents and say, right, is this the right thing now? There's no shame. There's no shame maybe in reviewing a decision and saying, right, is this the right thing right now? Even the emergency services, take everybody out of it except the emergency services. Is this the right thing now? And what are the consequences? Every action has a reaction. What are the consequences to a business going bust, to someone just not getting into the hospital on time? You know, and sometimes maybe if you have to review a decision when you factor all that in, there's no shame in that either. That's not going to happen, but as I say, there'd be no shame in that either.